This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
Hello, this is Michael Bressler with the second hour of the Saturday, April 27th, 2024, Cincinnati Inquirer for CABVI's Radio Reading Services. In this broadcast, we will cover today's TV listings and obituary, today's horoscopes, the etc. section with people news, what to watch, celebrity birthdays, and some Carolyn Hacks advice, and then we'll be on to as much of the nation and world news as we can get to in the remainder of the hour. Lots to cover, like every Saturday, so let's jump right in. WLWT NBC Channel 5 at noon is Earth Odyssey. At 12:30 is English Premier League Soccer, Brentford at Everton. And then at 2:30 is Premier League Soccer postgame. At 3 p.m. is the Monster Energy Supercross. And that takes us to 6 p.m. for the WLWT News 5 at 6. At 7 p.m. is NBC Nightly News. 7:30 is Let's Talk Cincy. At 8 p.m. is The Wall. At 9 p.m. is Weakest Link. At 10 p.m. is Saturday Night Live. At 11 p.m. is WLWT News 5 at 11. And at 11:30 is Saturday Night Live. WCPO, ABC Channel 9, at noon is the 2024 NFL Draft, rounds 4 through 7. And that takes us to 7 p.m. tonight, where we have Wise Money. At 7:30 is Cash Explosion. At 8 p.m. is the NBA Countdown. At 8:30, then, is NBA Basketball, teams to be announced. At 11 p.m. is WCPO 9 News at 11. And at 11:35 is Fast Home Rescue. WKRC, CBS Channel 12, at noon is the CBS Sports Spectacular, Monaco E. Prix. At 1 p.m. is the CBS Sports Spectacular, the Sale Grand Prix from Christchurch. At 2 p.m. is Course Record Breed. At 2:30 is To Be Announced. At 3 p.m. is PGA Tour Golf, the 2024 Zurich Classic of New Orleans. At 6 p.m. is the news. At 6:30 is CBS Weekend News. At 7 p.m. is Entertainment Tonight. At 8 p.m. is Elsbeth. At 9 p.m. is 48 Hours. At 10 p.m. is another episode of 48 Hours. At 11 p.m. is Local 12 News at 11. And at 11:30 is Full Measure. The CINCW channel 12.2 at noon is a paid program, and at 12:30 is another paid program. At 1 p.m. is LIV Golf, Adelaide. And that takes us to 6 p.m. tonight for Two and a Half Men. At 6:30 is Last Man Standing. At 7 p.m. is Modern Family. 7:30 is Modern Family. At 8 p.m. is a documentary, I Am Burt Reynolds. And that takes us to 10 p.m. for Two and a Half Men. At 10:30 is Last Man Standing. At 11 p.m. is Seinfeld. And at 11:30 is The Neighborhood. WXIX Fox Channel 19 at noon is a Reds season special. At 1 p.m. is a paid program. And at 1:30 then is MLS Soccer Los Angeles at Austin FC. Followed at 4 p.m. by Major League Baseball regional coverage, teams to be announced, which takes us to 7 p.m. for UFL football regional coverage with teams to be announced, which takes us to 10 p.m. for Fox 19 Now at 10 p.m. news, and then at 11 p.m. We Are Family. WKRP Channel 25 at noon is Acercate a Rocio. At 1 p.m. is a 2004 movie, Flight of the Phoenix, which takes us to 3:30 for another movie, a 2006 movie, Inside Man, which takes us to 6 p.m. for Caso Cerrado. At 6:30 is Noticias. At 7 p.m. is a 2007 movie, Transformers. And that takes us to 10 p.m. for Lo Que Callamos Las Mujeres. At 11 p.m. is Noticias. and at 11:30 is Noticias. WCET PBS Channel 48 at noon is Motor Week. At 12:30 is Milk Street Television. At 1 p.m. is To Dine For. At 1:30 is Patty's Mexican Table. At 2 p.m. is America's Test Kitchen. At 2:30 is Cook's Country. At 3 p.m. is Dookie Chase Kitchen, Leah. At 3:30 is Beyond Survival. At 4 p.m. is This Old House. At 4:30 is Ask This Old House. At 5 p.m. is Rick Steves Europe. At 5:30 is PBS News Weekend. At 6 p.m. is The Art Show. At 6:30 is Barbara Keller. At 7 p.m. is Celebrity Antiques Road Trip. At 8 p.m. is The Carol Burnett Show, Carol's Favorite Episodes. At 9 p.m. is Epic Train Journeys from Above. At 10 p.m. is Broadchurch. And at 11 p.m. is Austin City Limits featuring Sarah Jarosz. MyNet Channel 64 at noon is The First 48. At 1 p.m. is Chicago PD. At 2 p.m. is F2, Forensic Factor. At 3 p.m. is Chicago PD. At 4 p.m. is 911. At 5 p.m. is Weather. At 5:30 is Weather. At 6 p.m. is Family Feud. 6:30 is More Family Feud. 7 p.m. is Big Bang Theory. At 7:30 is Another Big Bang Theory. At 8 p.m. is Young Sheldon. At 8:30 is Young Sheldon. At 9 p.m. is Major Crimes. At 10 p.m. is Local 12 News. At 10:30 is Women of Wrestling. And at 11:30 is Chicago PD. NBC Channel 2 at noon is Wild Child. At 12:30 is English Premier League Soccer, Brentford at Everton, which takes us to 2:30 for the Premier League Soccer postgame. At 3 p.m. then is the Monster Energy Supercross. At 6 p.m. is News. At 6:30 is More News. At 7 p.m. is Inside Edition. At 7:30 is Jeopardy. At 8 p.m. is The Wall. At 9 p.m. is Weakest Link. At 10 p.m. is Saturday Night Live. At 11 p.m. is The News. And at 11:30 is Saturday Night Live. CBS Channel 7 at noon is the CBS Sports Spectacular, Monaco E Prix. At 1 p.m. is the CBS Sports Spectacular, the Sale Grand Prix in Christchurch. At 2 p.m. is the Course Record Breed. At 2:30 is To Be Announced. At 3 p.m. is PGA Tour Golf, the 2024 Zurich Classic of New Orleans, which takes us to 6 p.m. for News. 6:30 is More News. 7 p.m. is Wheel of Fortune. At 7:30 is the Ohio Lottery. At 8 p.m. is Elsbeth. At 9 p.m. is 48 Hours. At 10 p.m. is 48 Hours. At 11 p.m. is News. And at 11:30 is a paid program. PBS Channel 14 at noon is Belton's. At 12:30 is Stephen Raiklin. At 1 p.m. is Painting. At 1:30 is Paint. At 2 p.m. is Rick Steves Europe. At 2:30 is Brown. At 3 p.m. is Earth's Great Seasons. At 4 p.m. is A Brief History of the Future. At 5 p.m. is Nature, Raptors. At 6 p.m. is Classic Gospel. At 7 p.m. is Song of the Mountains. At 8 p.m. is a movie to be announced. At 10 p.m. then is Live from the Artist Den, and at 11 p.m. is Real South, R-E-E-L. PBS Channel 16 at noon is George. At 12:30 is Cyber Chase. At 1 p.m. is This Old House. At 1:30 is another episode of This Old House. At 2 p.m. is Ask This Old House, followed at 2:30 by another episode of Ask This Old House. At 3 p.m. then is Motor Week. At 3:30 is A Chef's Life. At 4 p.m. is Celebrity Antiques Road Trip. At 5 p.m. is Amanpour and Company. At 6 p.m. is Antiques Road Show. At 7 p.m. is To Be Announced. At 7:30 is Rick Steves Europe. At 8 p.m. is American Experience. At 8:30 is Ground Zero or G0. At 9 p.m. is Escape to the Chateau. At 10 p.m. is Modus. And at 11 p.m. is The Kate. ABC Channel 22 at noon is the 2024 NFL Draft, rounds 4 through 7. That takes us clear through until 7 p.m. tonight for Judge Judy. At 7:30 is another episode of Judge Judy. At 8 p.m. is NBA pregame. At 8:30 then is the NBA basketball game, teams to be announced. At 11 p.m. is the news, and at 11:30 is Full Measure. Fox, channel 22.2, at noon is a paid program. 12:30 is a paid program. 1 p.m. is a paid program. At 1:30 is MLS Soccer, Los Angeles at Austin FC. At 4 p.m. is Major League Baseball, regional coverage with teams to be announced. Which takes us then to 7 p.m. for UFL football regional coverage, teams to be announced. At 10 p.m. then is the news. At 10:30 is Last Man Standing. And at 11 p.m. is We Are Family. The CW, channel 26 at noon is Mom. At 12:30 is another episode of Mom. At 1 p.m. is LIV Golf, Adelaide. Which takes us to 6 p.m. for a Real Housewives, and all it says is housewife. At 6:30 is another housewife episode. At 7 p.m. is Young Sheldon. At 7:30 is another episode of Young Sheldon. At 8 p.m. is a 2020 documentary, I Am Burt Reynolds, which takes us to 10 p.m. for the news. At 10:30 is more Young Sheldon. At 11 p.m. is Family Guy, and at 11:30 is Family Guy. ION Television, channel 43, is the binge watch of Law & Order SUV, the Saturday binge watch, which with shows starting at noon and a new show starting every hour on the hour until 11 p.m. tonight. And finally, PBS channel 54 at noon is Garden Smart. At 12:30 is EchoSense. At 1 p.m. is Rick Steves Europe. At 1:30 is Brown. At 2 p.m. is Travel Scope. At 2:30 is Stephen Raiklin. At 3 p.m. is Lydia's Kitchen. At 3:30 is The Farmer. At 4 p.m. is America's Test Kitchen. At 4:30 is Cook's Country. At 5 p.m. is The Lawrence Welk Show. At 6 p.m. is The Antiques Roadshow. At 7 p.m. is Tim Farmer. At 7:30 is Red Green. At 8 p.m. is Kentucky Life. At 8:30 is Kentucky. At 9 p.m. is a 1967 movie, In the Heat of the Night. And at 11 p.m. is Austin City Limits featuring Sarah Jarosz. Now for today's obituary. Mason, Sylvester Mason, age 58, no town or state given. He passed on January 24th. No arrangements, service time, or service location or interment given. Today's horoscope from Sanctuary. Aries, March 21st to April 19th. Yesterday's optimism turns into obstacles. Feeling limited by challenging emotions, frustration arrives. Taurus, April 20th to May 20th. Communal unease rearing up. Tension is in your social sphere. Sit this one out. Gemini, May 21st to June 21st. The needs of others may get in the way of your professional progress. Feeling stifled? Attune to the big picture. Cancer, June 22nd to July 22nd. You know what needs to get done, but you may not want to do it. Responsibilities suffocating your freedom? Leo, July 23rd to October, or August 22nd. July 23rd to August 22nd. Self-expression, feeling blocked? A collaborator may be challenging to work with today. Nothing you contribute may satisfy them. Virgo, August 23rd to September 22nd. Complications in partnerships are likely today. Feeling the weight of someone else's emotions? Try not to absorb their heaviness. Libra, September 23rd to October 23rd. So much to do, but nothing's getting done. The moon triggers Saturn and Mars represents obstacles. Scorpio, October 24th to November 21st. Joy can appear to be a million miles away today. Getting what you desire seems like a hopeless fantasy. Sagittarius, November 22nd to December 21st. Coming to the rescue, you may be expected to handle a home difficulty. Capricorn, December 22nd to January 19th. Don't believe everything you think. An air of disillusion clouds your objectivity. Aquarius, January 20th to February 18th. Cold water is thrown on an aspiration you were fired up about. Financial worries blocking the way of your vision. And finally, Pisces, February 19th to March 20th. You may not be in the mood to deal with people today. Give yourself some grace. Now on to the etc. section for some people news. Harris hosts Kardashian to discuss criminal justice reform. Vice President Kamala Harris hosted reality television star Kim Kardashian at the White House on Thursday to discuss criminal justice reform. Harris is focused on convincing people of color and young voters to give President Joe Biden and her a second four-year term at a time when many voters are dissatisfied with their handling of the economy and the war in Gaza. The United States imprisons more people than any other country. Some one in five of those 1.9 million people are behind bars for a drug-related offense. Black and Latino people are disproportionately incarcerated, and drug law reform has the broadest support among young voters. Everybody makes mistakes, and for some that might rise to the level of being a crime, Harris said at the White House. But is it not the sign of a civil society that we allow people a way to earn their way back and give them the support and the resources they need to do that? Kardashian, who is also an entrepreneur, first became a vocal activist for criminal justice reform during a former President Donald Trump's administration. Harris praised her work. Every time I've gone and visited a prison, I've met some of the smartest individuals with the brightest ideas, and to see the changes that are happening to make their reentry easier, I think it's going to be a life-changing, Kardashian said. Wilson's memoir allegation against Cohen redacted in UK edition. Rebel Wilson's memoir is reportedly facing censorship in the United Kingdom following her account of workplace misconduct against former co-star Sacha Baron Cohen. In a passage from her book, Rebel Rising, which was released April 2nd, Wilson alleges that Cohen requested for her to digitally penetrate him during the filming of the 2016 movie The Brothers Grimsby. HarperCollins, the UK publisher of Rebel Rising, said in a statement that a portion of the memoir, purportedly Wilson's allegations against Cohen, has been removed from its edition. The book was released in the UK on Thursday. We are publishing every page, but for legal reasons, in the UK edition, we are redacting most of one page with some other small redactions and an explanatory note, a HarperCollins spokesperson told People magazine and the BBC. Those sections are a very small part of a much bigger story, and we're excited for readers to know Rebel's story when the book is released. In a statement posted to her Instagram stories on Thursday, Wilson thanked all the people who have come forward and acknowledged my experiences with Sacha Baron Cohen. Some celebrity birthdays. Actor Anouk Aimee turns 92. Guitarist Ace Frehley from Kiss turns 73. Singer Sheena Easton is 65. Director Matt Reeves is 58. Actor Mara West, 52. Actor Sally Hawkins, 48. Actor Ari Grainer, 41. Singer-guitarist Patrick Stump from Fall Out Boy is 40. Actor Sheila Van is 39. Actor Jenna Coleman, 38. Actor William Mosley, 37. and rapper-singer Lizzo is 36. Now for what to watch. Content by TV Weekly. Network broadcasting shows are listed in Eastern Pacific Time unless noted otherwise. Shows air 1 hour earlier in Central Mountain Time. Cable broadcasting shows are listed in Eastern Time. City Hunter, a Netflix original film. This film is a live-action adaptation of the popular Japanese manga. It follows Ryo Seiba, Ryohi Suzuki, a premier sweeper, who navigates the gritty underbelly of modern-day Shinjuku, Tokyo. Balancing a cool demeanor with a fun personality, Ryo tackles high-stakes challenges in the underworld Misato Morita. In the underworld, Misato Morita co-stars. My main problem, main being M-A-N-E, All Black season premiere. Celebrity stylist Dr. Boogie is back for season two, giving renewed hope and self-confidence to more real people confronting very personal hair journeys. Lux Listings Toronto, Prime Video, it's a new series. This spinoff of Lux Listings Sydney showcases high-stakes listings in Canada's largest city. Top agents Peter and Paige Torkin offer an all-access look behind the lavish buying and selling of multi-million-dollar Toronto properties. Predator vs. Prey on BBC America at 8 p.m. This nature documentary series continues with a forensic look at how cheetahs hunt their prey, including lechwe, impala, and wildebeest. Branching out, Hallmark Channel at 8 p.m. an original film. After Amelia's, Sarah Drew, daughter Ruby gets a school assignment to create a family tree, she discovers that Ruby's dad, TJ, Juan Pablo de Pace, lives nearby. Much to Amelia's surprise, TJ, a musician, wants to meet Ruby. Suddenly, her family tree begins to grow, and both mother and daughter discover that family trees can be complicated. Critter Fixers, Country Vets, on Nat Geo Wild at 9 p.m., the docs at Critter Fixer rush to aid a big tortoise with a badly cracked shell and attempt to wrangle a few scrappy miniature cows on the run. Now for some advice from Carolyn Hacks. Mom wants to be close, but her constant criticisms say otherwise. Adapted from an online discussion. Dear Carolyn, my mom really wants to be close to me and to spend a lot of time with my young children, but she is so constantly critical of me, my appearance, my parenting, and other intangible aspects of my life that I find her difficult to be around as often as she wants. I actually think it comes back to some form of undiagnosed anxiety, but she's not willing to have that conversation. I try to make sure we spend time with her on a regular basis, and the kids love her. I just find it so difficult and sometimes actually hurtful to be around her. I also give her opportunities to babysit without me there, but then she calls me later to express her criticisms. This is an aspect of her personality that doesn't seem likely to change, and one that I have talked to her about many times without effect. How do I keep it from getting in the way of family harmony? Can't take the criticism. Dear, can't take the criticism. You stop listening to it. Flat out stop. But then she calls me later? Lovely. The moment she decides to express her criticisms, though, the call is over. Oop, Mom, gotta run. Talk later. Click. As the opening fragment of her latest critique hangs there unfinished and unanswered, except by silence on your end of the line. You don't have to stand there and take any of it, ever. Not in person, either. I'm going to stop you there, Mom, calmly. When she picks at you, she undermines your kids. So model for them how to stand up for themselves. You can tell her this, too, before you start. Let her know plainly and without rancor what's happening from now on, or not. Whichever you choose is fine, as long as you're not having a conversation about it. It's a statement or nothing. Maybe, Mom, I've told you how I feel about when you criticize so many things about me. You chose not to stop when I respectfully asked you to. That's your choice, but I have choices too, so if you criticize me, then I will end the conversation. I'm telling you as a courtesy. Use your own words or help yourself to mine. She can huff about your choice, but, as promised, you will not engage with her on the subject. Your hunch about anxiety sounds right. It's so sad and self-defeating. Caring so much about how someone turns out, as your mom appears to, can ramp up people's fears and stress, which encourages them to dwell on problems and imperfections, which spills out as expressions of concern and criticism and efforts to fix and control, which drag down the mood and confidence of the person they're so invested in, undermining, even stunting, the very person they want so badly to succeed, and damaging to the parent-child or parent-grandchild relationship, too. It's not only sad, but also ironic. Here's hoping your no campaign nudges her toward getting help, but all you can do is stop completing the dysfunctional transaction. A reader's thought. Is she only critical of the parent, not of the children? If there's a chance she's including them in her worry and negativity, then I'd be leery of having her look after them without someone else there. My own grandmothers each saw their alone time with me as a chance to fix what my parents weren't doing right. Now on to some nation and world news on Saturday, April 27th. Demonstrations continue on campuses. Trump compares protest to white nationalist rally by Christopher Kahn and Eduardo Cuevas for USA Today. Dateline New York. As college protests over Israel's war in Gaza continued across the U.S. on Friday, Columbia University was negotiating with student demonstrators and soon-to-be graduates at the University of Southern California grappled with the cancellation of their upcoming commencement ceremony. Students still occupied Columbia's West Lawn early Friday, despite a rumored midnight deadline to clear the area. The Ivy League school has been the epicenter of student war protests for more than a week, especially after the university's president, Minush Shafik, called in the New York City Police Department and had more than 100 students arrested last Thursday. Since then, hundreds of students have set up similar encampments across the country, leading to a national debate over free speech on college campuses, as some Jewish students and administrators say the demonstrations have at times been sites of anti-Semitism. The student protesters have called on university officials to cut financial ties from Israel and Israeli companies, especially those benefiting from the ongoing war in Gaza. While the demonstrations have not led to any divestments, the week of protests have had broad impacts, forcing classes to move online and disrupting graduation plans. Trump compares protests to white nationalist rally in 2017. Donald Trump criticized the mostly peaceful protests Thursday, describing them as tremendous hate and saying that the violence at a white nationalist rally in Virginia when he was president was, by comparison, a little peanut. While student protests have escalated at universities across the United States in recent days, they have been largely peaceful, with no known deaths and none of the violent clashes that were seen between white nationalists and counter-protesters in Charlottesville, Virginia in 2017. University authorities have attempted to clear many of the protest encampments, saying they are often unauthorized and calling in police. About 500 demonstrators have been arrested in the past week. Some Republicans in Congress have accused university administrators of allowing Jewish students to be harassed during the protests, but activist groups have strongly denied that the protests are anti-Semitic. While they have acknowledged that hateful rhetoric has at times been directed at Jewish students, they insist that people who try to infiltrate and malign their movement are responsible for any harassment. In remarks to media Thursday following the day's testimony in his criminal trial in New York City, Trump said, "Charlottesville was a little peanut, and it was nothing compared to, and the hate wasn't the kind of hate that you have here," repeating an assertion that he made on his social media platform on Wednesday. A woman was run down by a car and killed during the clashes in Charlottesville, and Trump drew strong criticism in the days after the rally for equating white supremacists with counter-protesters and saying both sides were to blame. A year later, Trump denounced the violence in Charlottesville, writing on Twitter that the rally had resulted in senseless death and division, while condemning all forms of racism and violence. Trump, the Republican candidate for president in the November elections, also sought Thursday to blame place blame for the current campus protests on Democratic President Joe Biden. This is tremendous hate, and we have a man that can't talk about it because he doesn't understand it. He doesn't understand what's going on with our country, Trump said. Trump is currently on trial for allegedly falsifying business records related to a payment to a porn star to keep her silent about an affair prior to the 2016 election. He has denied any wrongdoing. Online classes canceled commencements. At Columbia University, students were given the option of virtual classes for the rest of the semester after protests forced the university to cancel in-person classes on Monday. The University of Southern California on Thursday announced it was canceling its main commencement ceremony for what it said were safety reasons. The decision came 10 days after administrators decided to bar valedictorian Asna Tabassum, who is Muslim, from delivering a commencement address. Other schools must soon decide whether to hold their commencement ceremonies as the spring semester winds down and graduations are scheduled for weeks ahead. Meanwhile, hundreds of people have been arrested at protests this week on university campuses from California and Texas to Indiana and Connecticut. At Emerson College in Boston, more than 100 people were arrested and 4 officers were injured when police cleared an encampment. In Atlanta, officers arrested more than 25 people and used non-lethal bullets to disperse protesters at Emory University. One person was shocked with a stun gun after being taken to the ground by police. More than 50 people were arrested at pro-Palestinian demonstrations at the University of Texas in Austin. And at USC, police arrested more than 90 people in on-campus protests. The days-long demonstrations have all centered on the war in Gaza that was triggered by Hamas's incursion into southern Israel on October 7th, when about 1,200 people, mostly civilians, were killed and more than 240 people were taken hostage. Weinstein accusers devastated after conviction overturned by Patrick Ryan for USA Today. Women who accused Harvey Weinstein of abuse were stunned Thursday by the announcement that the movie mogul's 2020 rape conviction had been overturned. The decision was made by the New York Court of Appeals, which found that the trial judge improperly let women testify who weren't part of the case. The allegations against Weinstein marked a watershed moment in the hashtag MeToo movement and spawned a mass reckoning in the entertainment industry around abuses of power and sexual assault. The case, which helped popularize the hashtag MeToo movement and spurred a reckoning in the entertainment industry, began in 2017 and led to a wave of allegations against the 72-year-old movie mogul. The 2020 rape conviction led to a 23-year prison sentence. The appeals court majority said that Judge James Burke incorrectly admitted testimony from women with allegations that were not a part of the case, but rather irrelevant, prejudicial, and untested allegations of prior bad acts. Weinstein's conviction in New York stemmed from the accusations brought by Miriam, Mimi, Haley, and Jessica Mann, but additional accusers also testified about their allegations of sexual misconduct against Weinstein. Women called the new decision disappointing and unjust. Jessica Barth, who accused Weinstein of sexual misconduct after the 2011 Golden Globes, called the decision a tragic step backwards in a statement obtained by USA Today. It sets a dangerous precedent, said Barth, founder of Voices in Action, a nonprofit that supports sexual assault survivors. Evidence of prior bad acts in order to prove a pattern of behavior is often allowed in criminal cases and should absolutely be allowed in sexual assault cases. The emotional and physical toll a trial takes on victims testifying in front of their rapist is unfathomable to anyone who has never had to endure that experience, especially when the justice system is stacked against victims, she continued. My thoughts are with all of the survivors who took the stand and faced the possibility of having to do it again. More than 10 unnamed Weinstein survivors known as the Silence Breakers expressed their collective shock. The news today is not only disheartening, but it's profoundly unjust, the group said in a statement shared with USA Today by SKDK, a consulting firm that works with advocacy groups. At a news conference Thursday, Weinstein's attorney, Arthur Adala said he had spoken to his client, who was grateful and maintained his innocence. Adala said Weinstein was the victim of a negative popularity contest amid a hashtag MeToo movement that placed the mogul at its center. Today's decision is a major step back in holding those accountable for acts of sexual violence. Douglas H. Wigdor, a lawyer for 8 Weinstein accusers, said in a statement, "Courts routinely admit evidence of other uncharged acts where they assist juries in understanding issues concerning the modus operandi or schemes of the defendant. The jury was instructed on the relevance of this testimony, and overturning the verdict is tragic in that it will require the victims to endure yet another trial." Weinstein will continue serving a 16-year prison sentence for a 2022 California conviction of rape. U.S. Key Inflation Gauge by Paul Davidson for the USA Today. A key inflation measure rose sharply in March, further dampening hopes that the Federal Reserve will soon cut interest rates. An underlying gauge of price increases stayed elevated, and household spending increased dramatically again, possibly keeping inflation higher for longer. Consumer prices overall increased 2.7% from a year earlier, above February's 2.5% rise, but well below the 40-year high of 7% in June of 2022, according to the Commerce Department's Personal Consumption Expenditures Index. On a monthly basis, prices increased 0.3% in line with the advance of the prior month, the PCE index shows. A measure of core prices that excludes volatile food and energy items and that the Fed follows closely, increased 0.3% on a monthly basis, the same as in February. That kept the annual increase at 2.8%. The disappointing readings were largely expected after the Commerce Department said in Thursday's report on economic growth that core PCE inflation rose at an annual rate of 3.7% in the first quarter, more than the 3.4% forecasters projected. The big gain was mostly the result of an upward revision of January's monthly increase to 0.5% from 0.45%, says economist Paul Ashworth of Capital Economics. Just a few weeks ago, Fed Chair Jerome Powell said the central bank would not overreact to worrisome inflation numbers in January and February. He suggested they could have been blips, and inflation still appeared headed toward the Fed's 2% target. His tone changed after another inflation measure out early this month, the Consumer Price Index, revealed larger-than-expected gains in March. Overall, inflation jumped to 3.5% from 3.2%, and the core reading stayed high at 3.8%. The prices of goods such as used cars, furniture, and appliances generally have fallen as pandemic-related supply chain snarls have resolved. But the cost of services, including rent, car insurance, and health care, have climbed higher, in part because of sharply rising wages tied to COVID-induced labor shortages. Last month, goods prices ticked up just 0.1% as the cost of vehicles and parts tumbled 0.6%. The cost of services jumped 0.6%. Transportation surged 1.6%. And financial services and insurance increased 0.5%. After the CPI report, Powell said it's likely to take longer than expected for the Fed to gain confidence that inflation is heading sustainably to the Fed's target. Futures markets that had anticipated the first decrease in the Fed's key interest rate in June and a total of 3 cuts this year now expect just 1 in September. Some economists still believe inflation can resume its prior downshift fairly quickly as a decline in rent for new tenant leases begins to affect existing lease renewals and slowing wage growth restrains the rising cost of services. Household spending increased a hefty 0.8% after a similar rise the previous month. Personal income rose 0.5%, up from 0.3%. But Americans are drawing heavily from savings to help finance their purchases, a trend that's unlikely to persist. The personal savings rate, the share of income that households are socking away, fell from 3.6% to 3.2% last month. That's the lowest since October 2022 and down from a pre-pandemic average of about 7%. The Personal Consumption Expenditures Index says consumer prices overall increased 2.7% in March from a year earlier. Aid workers killed in strike remembered. Egyptian officials work to restart hostage deal talks, by Sibeli Mays Osterman for USA Today. A solemn crowd gathered in the National Cathedral in Washington, D.C. on Thursday to remember the seven staffers for the aid group World Central Kitchen who were killed in a drone attack in Gaza, sparking a wave of renewed outrage at the Israeli military. Jose Andres, the celebrity chef and founder of the organization, mourned the loss of seven members in the April 1st Israeli strike, people he called the best of humanity. Recounting the workers' lives and their paths to joining the organization, he choked up. One staffer, Jacob Flickinger, a 33-year-old dual citizen of the U.S. and Canada, was called T.O. Jacob by children in Acapulco, where he volunteered aid in the wake of a hurricane, Andres said. Another, Damian Sobal, had a street named after him in Turkey in honor of his efforts to help after an earthquake. Seyfeddin Seif Abutaha, a 25-year-old Palestinian whose family flower business became the aid group's headquarters in Gaza, was texting his mother to ask whether she was asleep when he was killed, Andres said. Andres reiterated his demand for an investigation into the workers' deaths. I know we all have many unanswered questions about what happened and why. There is no excuse for these killings. None, he said. The official explanation is not good enough, and we still demand an investigation into the actions of the IDF. Even one innocent life taken is one too many. He urged leaders to lead by the same standards as the humanitarian workers. The fate of the many cannot be decided by the hateful and divisive actions of the few, he said. The celebration of life was held under the sweeping ceilings and stained glass windows of the cathedral and was punctuated with musical performances, including from famed cellist Yo-Yo Ma, Second Gentleman Doug Emhoff, Deputy Secretary of State Kurt Campbell, and Senator Chris Van Hollen from Maryland attended the ceremony. Three faith leaders of the Washington area, Imam Talib Sharif, Rabbi Susan Shankman, and Archbishop Wilton Cardinal Gregory, offered prayers in memory of the workers. The group of staffers, which also included British citizens John Chapman, 57, James Henderson, 33, and James Kirby, 47, and Lal Zalmi Frankum, 43, of Australia, were killed after an Israeli drone struck their convoy carrying aid through a deconflicted zone in Deir al-Balah in the central Gaza Strip. The drone hit the group as it left a warehouse after it unloaded more than 100 tons of aid in two armored trucks branded with World Central Kitchen's logo. The convoy had informed the IDF of its movements, according to the aid group. The organization halted its humanitarian aid efforts in Gaza, previously one of the largest in operation in the war-torn enclave, in response to the workers' deaths. The deaths fueled outrage at the IDF's conduct in its ongoing siege in Gaza, where more than 34,000 Palestinians have died since Israel launched a sweeping military operation in response to Hamas's surprise attack on Israeli border communities on October 7th. The UN said the World Central Kitchen staffer deaths brought the number of aid workers killed to at least 224. Egyptian delegation in Israel for talks on Gaza hostages. An Egyptian delegation met Israeli officials on Friday, looking for a way to restart talks to end the war in Gaza and return the remaining Israeli hostages, an official briefed on the meetings said. The official, who spoke on condition of anonymity, said Israel had no new proposals to make, although it was willing to consider a limited truce in which 33 hostages would be released instead of the 40 previously under discussion. There are no current hostage talks between Israel and Hamas, nor is there a new Israeli offer in that regard, the official said. What there is an attempt by Egypt to restart the talks with an Egyptian proposal that would entail the release of 33 hostages, women, elderly, and infirm. According to Israeli media reports, Israeli intelligence officials believe there are 33 female, elderly, and sick hostages left alive in Gaza out of the total of 133 still being held by Hamas and other Palestinian militant groups. There was no decision on how long any truce would last, but if such an exchange were agreed upon, the pause in fighting would be definitely less than 6 weeks, the official said. The visit by the Egyptian delegation followed Israeli media reports of a visit to Cairo on Thursday by the Israeli Army Chief, Lieutenant General Herzi Halevi, and Ronan Bar, the head of Shin Bet, Israel's domestic intelligence service. Egypt, concerned about a potential influx of Palestinian refugees from neighboring Gaza if the war continues, with the long-promised Israeli offensive into the southern city of Rafah, has taken an increasingly active role in negotiations. The Egyptians are really picking up the mantle on this. Egypt wants to see progress, not least because it's worried about a prospective Rafah operation, the official said. Qatar, the previous main broker, had increasingly been excluded, according to the official, after failing to respond to Israeli demands to expel Hamas leaders from its territory or curb their finances. Qatar is still involved, but in a lesser capacity, the official said. It's clear to everyone they failed to deliver, even when it came to expelling Hamas or even shutting down their bank accounts. Gaza baby rescued from dead mother's womb dies. A baby girl who was delivered from her dying mother's womb in a Gaza hospital following an Israeli airstrike has died, the doctor who was caring for her said on Friday. The baby had been named Sabrine Al-Rau. The second name means soul in Arabic. Her mother, Sabrine Al-Sakani, Al-Sheikh, was seriously injured when the Israeli strike hit the family home in Rafah on Saturday night. Her husband, Shukri, and their three-year-old daughter, Malak, were killed. Pentagon begins building pier to deliver aid to Gaza by Tom Vandenbroek for USA Today. Dateline Washington. The U.S. military has begun construction of a floating pier 3 miles from Gaza's shore, a critical step in increasing humanitarian aid shipments to civilians whose needs have grown increasingly dire after months of war, U.S. officials said. Troops began building the structure Thursday, said Air Force Major General Pat Ryder, the Pentagon press secretary. The floating pier, 72 feet wide and 270 feet long, will receive shipments of food and other humanitarian aid transported from Cyprus by commercial ships. Smaller ships will ferry the aid to a pier on Gaza's shore for delivery inland. Humanitarian aid from the sea is expected to begin flowing in the first week of May. Land routes provide aid more efficiently, but have been restricted by Israel over security concerns. In a briefing with reporters, senior U.S. and military officials described the aid effort and security for 1,000 U.S. soldiers and sailors involved. They spoke on condition of anonymity under ground rules set by the Pentagon. Gaza's entire population of 2.2 million people faces hunger, a senior U.S. official said. In northern Gaza, more than half the people face catastrophic levels of food insecurity. About one-third of the children there show signs of severe malnutrition. In southern Gaza, one in four people faces catastrophic food insecurity. Army landing ships, capable of carrying as many as 15 trucks, will ferry the aid from the floating pier to an 1,800-foot causeway that will be built into Gaza's shore. The military officials stressed that U.S. troops will not be involved in driving the aid ashore or set foot in Gaza to aid the effort. Instead, U.S. Army engineers have been training Israeli counterparts to anchor the pier on Gaza's shore, the military official said. Initially, about 90 trucks per day will deliver humanitarian aid, the military official said. The operation's full capacity will be 150 trucks per day. By comparison, land routes into Gaza have averaged about 220 trucks per day. Israel will dedicate a brigade of thousands of soldiers, naval ships, and Air Force warplanes to protect the aid operation. The Pentagon also has significant firepower, including Navy destroyers and warplanes, in the region. Russia attacks Ukraine's rail lines, a source says, by Tom Baumforth for Reuters. Dateline Kyiv, Ukraine. Russia is targeting Ukrainian rail lines with airstrikes to disrupt the delivery of desperately needed U.S. weapons to the front and complicate military logistics, a Kyiv intelligence source said on Friday. The United States approved a $61 billion aid package for Ukraine this week and said the first delivery should arrive in a matter of days, easing acute shortages of artillery shells that have hamstrung Kyiv's forces for months. As the aid was finalized after 6 months of congressional wrangling, Russia's defense minister said on Tuesday that Moscow would increase attacks on logistics centers and storage sites holding Western weapons. On Thursday, Ukrainian rail infrastructure was targeted by Russian strikes in the eastern Donetsk region, northeastern Kharkiv region, and central Cherkasy region, the National Rail Company said. The attack in Donetsk, which is the main focus of Russia's offensive in the east, killed three electrical mechanics working for the railway company and wounded four more, it said. Ukrainian officials seldom provide detailed statements about strikes on sensitive military targets, but the Ukrainian intelligence source confirmed to Reuters that there had been attacks on rail infrastructure aimed at disrupting the supply of weapons. Also, the overall complication of our logistics, the source added. Outnumbering and outgunning Kyiv's forces many times over, Russian troops have had the battlefield momentum since February when they captured the longtime bastion town of Avdiivka. A U.S. defense official, speaking on condition of anonymity, said on Thursday that their goal of the aid from the United States was to enable Ukraine to regain the initiative. Kyiv faces manpower shortages on the battlefield, and questions linger over the strength of its fortifications along a sprawling 621-mile-long front. Russia has periodically attacked rail infrastructure throughout the 26-month invasion. In April, Ukrzaliltsia, the railway company, temporarily suspended all deliveries to the southern Black Sea port of Chornomorsk. Blinken confronts China over backing Russia's war. By Simon Lewis for Reuters. Dateline Beijing. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken raised concerns on Friday about China's support for Russia's military, one of the many issues threatening to sour the recent improvement in relations between the world's biggest economies. Blinken raised the matter during 5.5 hours of talks with China's top diplomat, Wang Yi, in Beijing, the latest high-level contact between the countries that have eased last year's acrimony. Quote, I reiterated our serious concern about the PRC providing components that are powering Russia's brutal war of aggression against Ukraine, end quote, Blinken said at a press conference at the end of his visit on Friday, using China's official name, the People's Republic of China. Underscoring the closeness of the Beijing-Moscow relationship, Russian Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu met his Chinese counterpart Dong Jun on Friday and said the two countries were working to strengthen their strategic partnership in the defense sector. Despite its no-limits partnership with Moscow, China has steered clear of providing arms for Russia's war in Ukraine, but Blinken said its supply of so-called dual-use goods was having a material effect in Ukraine and raising the threat Russia poses to other countries in Europe. China has said it has not provided weaponry to any party, adding that it is, quote, not a producer of or party involved in the Ukraine crisis, end quote. However, it says that normal trade between China and Russia should not be interrupted or restricted. Blinken's visit produced little progress on other contentious issues, including U.S. complaints about cheap Chinese exports and tensions over Taiwan and the South China Sea. Instead, both sides were focusing on issues such as people-to-people exchanges. In addition to his talks with Wang, Blinken met Chinese President Xi Jinping, who reiterated Beijing's concerns that the United States was suppressing its economic development. This is a fundamental issue that must be addressed, just like the first button of a shirt that must be put right in order for the China-U.S. relationship to truly stabilize, improve, and move forward, Xi said. Earlier, Wang told Blinken that the giant ship of the China-U.S. ties had stabilized, but negative factors in the relationship are still increasing and building. And the relationship is facing all kinds of disruptions. China's legitimate development rights have been unreasonably suppressed, and our core interests are facing challenges, Wang told Blinken. The agenda for the talks was set during the November summit between Biden and Xi in San Francisco and a follow-up call in April. Blinken, along with senior U.S. officials focused on anti-narcotics collaboration with China, met China's Minister of Public Security, Wang Jiaohong, to discuss the fentanyl issue. Blinken told the news conference that China has made some progress on the issue, but said that more needs to be done. The FDA, bird flu traces found in 20% of milk samples, by Julie Steenhuisen and Tom Polanasek for Reuters. One in five commercial milk samples tested in a nationwide survey contained particles of the H5N1 virus, the Food and Drug Administration said late Thursday, suggesting the outbreak of bird flu is more widespread than previously thought. The agency said there is no reason to believe the virus found in milk poses a risk to human health. This says this virus has largely saturated dairy cattle throughout the country, said Dr. Michael Osterholm, an infectious disease expert at the University of Minnesota. Many infectious disease experts and government officials have said they believe the pasteurization process will inactivate the virus, also known as avian influenza. However, additional testing is needed to confirm that there is no infectious virus in the milk, the agency said. To date, the retail milk studies have shown no results that would change our assessment that the commercial milk supply is safe, the FDA said in its latest update. I'm not worried about the milk itself. It does indicate that the virus is more widespread among dairies than we had previously thought, said Samuel Alkane, associate professor of food science at Cornell University. We had a little over 30 herds or farms that had been reported as having positive for avian influenza. We have just under 30,000 farms across the U.S. 33 is a really small number. It makes it seem like there is definitely more spread out there. 8 U.S. states have confirmed cases of bird flu in 33 dairy herds, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Only one person, a Texas farm worker, has been confirmed to have bird flu in the current outbreak. The patient suffered conjunctivitis, an eye irritation that can cause redness and discomfort. The FDA said the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has not recorded additional human cases beyond the first confirmed case. FDA is further assessing any positive findings through egg inoculation tests, which it described as a gold standard for determining a viable virus. Trump team attacks story of ex-publisher Pecker. Aisha Bagchi and Bart Jansen of USA Today. Dateline New York. The eighth day of Donald Trump's New York hush money trial gave the former president's legal team their chance to attack the story prosecutors told of Trump colluding with the tabloid executive to boost his 2016 presidential campaign. Former National Enquirer publisher David Pecker spent nearly the entire week testifying about an alleged scheme to catch and kill stories that could hurt Trump's 2016 electoral chances. Prosecutors allege Trump falsified the purpose of checks to his former lawyer, Michael Cohen, in order to conceal a conspiracy to unlawfully interfere in the 2016 presidential election through a hush money payment to porn star Stormy Daniels. Trump has pleaded not guilty and also denies Daniels' claims that the pair had sex. Before the day's proceedings began, Trump told reporters that he wished his wife Melania had a happy birthday while complaining about being stuck at the trial. He said he would join his wife in Florida after the trial wrapped up for the day. The former president has started to equivocate on whether he will testify in the hush money trial. I would, if it's necessary, Trump said in a telephone interview Thursday with Newsmax. Trump lawyer Emil Bove focused on distancing Trump from the actions of Pecker and American Media Incorporated. He got Pecker to confirm the National Enquirer was running stories about Bill and Hillary Clinton before the August 2015 meeting Pecker described where he agreed to help the Trump campaign. Pecker also confirmed that The Guardian published an article in May 2015 about malpractice suits against Ben Carson, one of Trump's GOP primary opponents, a question potentially aimed at suggesting to the jury that Pecker's coverage of the political issues wasn't shaped by Trump. Bove suggested the public knew Pecker was helping Trump, citing a Wall Street Journal article that ran days before the 2016 election that said, quote, "Since last year, the Inquirer has supported Mr. Trump's presidential bid, endorsing him and publishing negative articles about some of his opponents," end quote. He also got Pecker to confirm that self-interest powered his company's $30,000 payment for a story from a Trump Tower doorman that Trump fathered a child with a housekeeper, even though AMI concluded the story was false. And Bove got Pecker to confirm that AMI didn't admit to a campaign violation in a non-prosecution agreement Pecker signed. The company did pay a $187,500 civil penalty as part of a separate agreement not to contest having committed a violation. That's an important issue for the defense because, in order for Trump to be convicted on felony charges, prosecutors have to prove Trump not only falsified business records, but that he did so to commit or conceal another crime. One of the prosecution's theories is that Trump was trying to conceal that he violated federal campaign finance laws by making the hush money payment. Cohen pleaded guilty in 2018 to a violation of federal campaign contribution limits for making the payment. Well, I can see by the clock on the wall that we have met our hour for the Saturday, April 27th, 2024, second hour of the reading of the Cincinnati Inquirer. So this is Michael Bressler signing off for now.